Volatility in the market is a fact. What isn't so clear is what the ups and downs of the market can do to your retirement portfolio. For answers, call Kevin Brooker at 800-975-6717. Kevin is founder and CEO of Silverleaf Financial, and he's been helping people cut through the noise and create a retirement and income plan that can take you all the way through retirement. Call now for your free financial consultation, 800-975-6717. Today's market volatility can really take a toll on your portfolio. But what if you could lock in your gains and still be in a position to participate in the gains without suffering losses if the market plunges again? That's what Kevin Brooker at Silverleaf Financial can help you achieve. Your no-cost analysis includes a portfolio x-ray showing any hidden fees in your current plan. He'll show you how by claiming Social Security at the right time can make a huge difference in your retirement income. Call Kevin Brooker today, 800-975-6717. Do it today.
This is Kevin Brooker. Welcome to Cruising Through Retirement. You know, retirement planning has really seen very significant changes over the past 20 years. A lot of it's been influenced by shifts in the economy and demographics, of course, technology, regulations, and many, many other things. So today we're going to cover a lot of those changes and help you plan for your best retirement.
Cruising Through Retirement with Kevin Brooker. Kevin is an investment advisor representative with more than 30 years experience. He's helped thousands of people cruise through retirement, and he'd be happy to help you too. Stick around for today's adventure on Cruising Through Retirement.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. This is Cruising Through Retirement with Kevin Brooker. I'm Steve Siddall. Kevin, been helping folks for more than 30 years getting into and through retirement. You will find him at Silverleaf Financial, silverleaffinancial.com. More than 30 years, we're talking about changes, Kevin. 30 years ago, the 401k was a figment of our imagination.
You know what? It really was. Most people hadn't even heard of a 401k.
Exactly.
Right? And I think they just came out in the late 80s or something, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And so they haven't been around for a long time. And one of the big differences, if you look, for instance, you know, a lot of people right now are talking about baby boomers, and maybe there's a lot of boomers listening. I am the very last year of the boomers. I was born in 1964. And you guys might know baby boom generation, I believe, is everybody born from 1948 to 1964. And the reason I know that is because my brother is the other end of the boomer.
Okay, fair enough.
So that 18-year range, that's the baby boom generation. And right now there's 9 or 10,000 of them turning 65 every single day, according to the people that write these articles. And so I thought it was interesting to look back and say, you know what, when these, what do they call them? I think they call them the peak boomer, you know, the first couple of years of the boomers.
Right.
That they're starting, you know, they're getting ready for retirement, right, if they haven't already retired. And, well, I know my brother has. And so I thought it was interesting to look back and say, what happened? Because they probably started working in the late 70s, early 80s. They got their, you know, started working full-time as an adult, if you will. And at that point in time, I think the numbers were something like 60% of the population had a defined benefit plan.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's virtually zero in terms of employees of private companies, right? In other words, most private sector employers have switched to the 401k, which we all talk about, but it's the public employees that still have pensions. But if you look at the difference also, that has dropped dramatically from the early 80s to where it is now in terms of, you know, there's only about 20% of public employees actually participate in the pension plan. And it's so funny to me, Steve, because it always boggles my mind if you do a survey and you do research and you ask people, would you like an additional source of protected income in retirement? Most people say yeah, and they're in favor of the idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then when it comes to making the choice to set up that guaranteed income from themselves, a lot of them don't do it. And so I never can wrap my head fully around that. If it's just they don't understand it, they chose against it. I don't know where that disconnect lies. But it's very interesting to me. What I'm getting at is that if you look back in time, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, a lot of employers offered pension plans, and employees, they love the pension because it's that second leg of what we used to call the three-legged stool, right? The one leg is your Social Security check. The second leg was your pension. And the third leg of the three-legged stool was your personal savings. Because your Social Security check is only supposed to make up 35 or 40% of your income, guys. It was never intended to be your entire only source of retirement income. Some people have turned it into that, but we don't recommend it, okay? We don't recommend it because chances are, it would be very difficult for most people to just live off that Social Security check if you have any debt at all. So if you have a mortgage, it's probably not going to work out that way. If you're debt-free, then it is possible you could live just off that Social Security check. And I know a lot of couples that are retired, married couples that are both getting a check. They're totally fine living off just the Social Security because combined, they've got about $5,000, some of them $6,000 a month coming in. So if you ask yourself, where is that going to go in the future? It's really easy to see how the Social Security trust fund is becoming depleted because everybody gets a cost of living adjustment, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you've got a couple, like the maximum benefit now is around $4,000 a month, I believe. So you could be looking at a couple collecting $100,000 a year in Social Security. Just two people, okay?
Yeah.
Collecting $100,000. And then step back and look and think about, do the math and say, wait a minute, how many people are collecting? How many millions of people are collecting? And it doesn't take long to figure out, you know what, there's going to be a point, guys, where it's just going to run out of money. If Congress doesn't do something, it's going to run out of money. And the date that we're talking, because of the snowball effect, because of the cost of living increases, because more and more people are retiring, and we have a smaller workforce that's paying that payroll tax, that is the basis, right? That's what funds Social Security, is the money we all pay in payroll taxes. So then if you're like me, you say, wait a second, what about all these drivers for Uber and Lyft and DoorDash? What about all these independent contractors? Are they all paying their payroll taxes? Are they all contributing to Social Security like the rest of us? And so I think there's a lot of areas we could take a look at that we could raise more money. You know, one of the provisions out there we've talked about before, Steve, a little side note, is there's a bill in front of Congress called You Earned It, You Keep It. And this is a bill that is aiming to eliminate the federal income tax on your Social Security check, right? And the way they would pay for it is by getting rid eliminating, if you will. Right now, there's a wage cap. Right now, once you pass about 168 or so in income, you're no longer paying the Social Security. And what they're saying is let's give everybody the exemption to like 250, and then income over 250, those folks will now start paying into Social Security, which mm-hmm. I think that's totally fair. That would mean everybody, but I don't know why they got to do the donut hole. I don't know why there was this carve out to begin with. It's because I have to think it's because the lawmakers didn't want to keep paying it themselves, right? They're the ones that write the laws, right? So all they need to do, guys, is get rid of that wage cap. That would solve a big, big part of this problem with Social Security. And the end result would be that everybody would be paying the exact same percentage on all of their income into the Social Security program. To me, it would make the program much more fair. It would make it much stronger. And then we don't have to have federal tax on your Social Security check for all the retirees. So to me, it's a win-win. I really would like people to talk about it and mention it to your friends. Let them know. Talk to your congressman and let them know you support it.
And again, this is the kind of thing where that's the key. Let your congresspeople, let the folks in Washington know what you're thinking. Let them know what you want. Because otherwise, they work for us.
They do work for us. And guys, we have to take back control of this conversation. Take back control of the dialogue. I personally think people on the far left as well as on the far right have taken control of the dialogue. And I think that's what's moved us to these extremes, in addition to some other issues. But I think that's contributed to the extreme movement, is that people on the extreme right and left seem to have the ear of the politicians. So all of us in the middle need to speak up and let them know, you know what, I'm not as concerned about, you know, I don't know about trans issues and the LGBTQ or however many damn letters there are. Yeah. I'm really not as concerned about that. But Senator, what I do care about is Social Security. Okay, I care about Medicare. I'm very concerned about Medicare, all right? But I'm really not that concerned about these cultural issues. And I know a lot of people are, but I think to me what affects many, many more people in a much more substantial way is the Social Security and Social Security and Medicare programs. Right. We've got something like 65, 70 or 70 million people rely on these programs for their living, for their health care. which I would think has got to take a lot higher priority, right?
You would think so.
So why aren't the politicians talking about it? Why is nobody out there seeming trying to fix it? Why is this bill languished in Congress for 2 years? This bill I'm referring to is Social Security. That was originally introduced 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago for sure, yeah.
You know,
and it was a bipartisan bill. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
It was. And so to me, it means, you know, we need to, the people need to take back control of the issues that are, and let them know what's important to you. And if it's some of these other issues, then so be it. Personally, I think at least for most people that are over the age of 50, I would think Medicare and Social Security has to be very high on their priority list.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And again, when you look at it, right now, the baby boomers have control, but that control is very, very quick to be gone, I think, because you're going to have, you know, Gen Z in there, and they're going to take over.
They are.
And you've told me this before, Kevin, and I agree that, you know, when the younger folks take over, they don't care about Social Security. They didn't think they were going to have it anyway.
No, they don't. They don't. And I remember a lot of people, you know, as I've gotten older, you know, people have been, I've been hearing for over 20 years how Social Security is going to go broke, right?
Right, of course.
And they did just extend the life of it by 1 year, I think, a couple of weeks ago.
Woo-woo!
You know, so bring out the party hats,
yeah.
Right? You know, so all that it means, guys, when they're talking about Social Security going broke, it's not really that it's going broke. It's that the money that's being paid into the system is in roughly 10 years, the beginning of the 2030s, mid-2030s, the amount of money that's being collected through payroll taxes will be less than the amount that they're sending out, all right? So what that means then is that the excess reserves in the trust fund are going to have to be spent down because we don't have enough money coming into it, all right? And so that's because of what I mentioned earlier. We have a lot fewer workers now, you know, we always looked at it in terms of, in the past, there was maybe 8 or 10 or 12 workers for every person collecting a Social Security check. Now there's about half that, or at least a significant amount less. And so, you know, the issue that, which is, you know what, Steve, to me, that's the benefit of immigration to me. If these people get jobs and they start paying taxes and they start paying their payroll taxes and contributing to our programs.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, that's the key. If they can pay taxes and contribute, that's the key.
And contribute, right? And that's what I'm looking for. But I think we need to have a discussion about all the independent contractors and making sure they're contributing. Because I know personally, I know a lot of people that have all sorts of income on the side that they don't report and they don't pay Social Security taxes on. So personally, I can't believe I'm going to say it, but I'm in favor of giving more money to the IRS. That is part of one thing that with the, what was it, the Inflation Reduction Act, I believe, that was passed by this Congress. One of the things they did is set aside a bigger chunk of money to enhance staffing for the IRS, specifically for enforcement against tax evasion by wealthy people and corporations. They define that as people making over 400 grand a year. And just since they've increased the focus on the effort, the Treasury has brought in over $500 million. In back taxes that were owed but weren't paid. And so now I do see some Republicans trying to cut that budget. They want to cut the enforcement from the IRS. And I really want them to explain how they've got a problem with the debt, but then they want to cut the IRS. Guys, please call. You got to start calling these people out. You got to start questioning how they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. On the one hand, they say we've got too much debt. We're spending too much money in Washington. On the other hand, they say they want to cut the IRS, which is how we raise the money to pay down the debt. That's where the bulk of the money comes that finances this country is from payroll and income tax. That's where we get our biggest source of revenue. And if you're cutting the enforcement of that, then you're definitively reducing collection of revenue. And you're helping out the tax evaders and the criminals to avoid paying taxes that they owe. So I don't understand that. To me, it's hugely hypocritical. It's talking out of both sides of your mouth. If you truly believe you want to reduce debt, then you shouldn't say anything about a tax cut. You should be talking about raising taxes or find other ways to raise revenue, but it certainly doesn't make any sense to me.
Raising taxes does not get votes.
Cutting enforcement. I think that's the problem, Steve. There's too many. We need to strike some sort of a national movement where people actually care enough about the country that we all get. Wasn't it like World War II? We all got together to, you know, to be behind the government because soldiers were off overseas. Yeah. And people had to get into their jobs, and everybody would be getting behind America to unify the country, to achieve a common goal. I think a common goal makes a lot of sense in terms of reducing our debt. And if some and it's, I think the trickle down economics that some people have pushed for years, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's proven it doesn't work. And in other words, they claim that by cutting taxes, that'll increase revenue to the government. If that worked, then we wouldn't be looking at the largest debt in our nation's history, because we've tried trickle down economics for the last 30 years. I think it started with Reagan with the tax cuts over 30 years, and our debt has done nothing but go through the roof. And if you look at the ratio that CEOs make compared to the workers, 30 years ago, it was maybe 50 to 1. Now it's 200 to 1. The average CEO is making 200 times their average worker. All right. So what it tells me is that a lot of these tax breaks have gone to the top, the people on top, the top 5%. They're the ones that have benefited from these lower taxes, not the middle class and the rest of us. And I think that's part of the problem is there's not enough extension of the tax brackets. They don't go high enough in terms of income, and they don't go high enough in terms of percentage. All these people making billions of dollars a year should be paying significantly more in taxes, and we could do something to reduce that debt.
All right. Well, you've solved the problem.
I'm doing my best here.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, you know, we were talking before the show about negativity and how much negativity is out there. And so how do we get beyond that? I mean, you know, depending on, I mean, if you're watching CNN or you're watching Fox, it's negative both ways.
It is. And I don't know that there's a simple answer to that. I personally think part of the problem, I think social media is a big part of the problem.
Well, I agree.
And any knucklehead with a microphone and an internet connection, you know, can blast whatever they're thinking to the world, and without any idea if the person knows what they're talking about, if they
well,
have any, right?
Yeah, yes. So many people in general get their financial advice from TikTok.
Oh, it is. That's a horrible idea.
Oh,
right?
God.
Okay. Horrible.
Maybe, you talk about no accountability. Holy cow.
Oh, my gosh. If any of you guys do that, then fine. Looking for an idea, fine. But please don't implement anything, right?
Until you talk with somebody like you, you know, right? Independent fiduciary, that's the key
to
all this.
Talk to somebody with some expertise. You know, if it's in the financial field, find people with expertise that have been doing this for decades, that have licensed in all the different areas like I do, that can help you out. And I'm happy to answer the questions. And I'm happy to say, hey, that's a good idea. Or you know what? That probably isn't such a good idea. Just like if you're doing anything else, right? Are you going to hire somebody to build a house for you that's never built a house, that's 19 years old? Maybe you would.
Not so much.
Some of us wouldn't think that's very smart, okay? So I think whatever you're doing, you want to hire, if you're hiring any type of a worker, a contractor, you want somebody that's experienced, that's been around the block, that knows what they're doing, and that is going to talk to you, you know, give you reasonable prices, not just try to rip you off, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that applies to everything. It applies to everything, you know? So as for solving the negativity, I think this country is more divided than it's ever been. And I think it feels like there's more negativity than there's ever been.
I agree.
And I don't know what the solution is. I keep saying to myself that I feel like we need to have some sort of national movement, like, you know, something to unify this country that we can all agree that it's worth working toward. I would think that goal is reducing spending and reducing our debt. All right. But at the same time, I believe it's increasing revenue, which means increasing taxes. But guys, I'm talking about the top 5%. I'm talking about bringing the estate tax back down to $1 million, all right, or $2 million. It's certainly, a couple does not need to leave $25 million tax-free. I think that's a ridiculous gift to the wealthy people, all right? The reason these people are wealthy is because they grew up and they made their money in this country. I don't think there's anything wrong with asking them to contribute back to the country that's helped them become wealthy. So that's my opinion on it. All right. A couple of the things that happened, though, going back to what we're talking about, what's changed over the last couple of decades with retirement plans. You know that Roth 401k? That didn't exist until the last 18 years.
Yeah, that's amazing. And that, I mean, I remember when it became something, and I was working at a big company, and this young guy, who's a little older than me, he was literally jumping up and down. A Roth, this is the best thing ever.
Yes. Oh, here,
and I was
here.
Like, what are you talking about? I mean, I, you know, obviously a long time ago, but.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 18 years. Roth 401k is 18 years old. So I guess the Roth 401k can vote now.
I guess.
So, you know, 18. And anyway, if you guys have a Roth 401k at your job, I would really, really almost beg you to sit down and run the numbers. If you're a young person, you know, like below the age of 40, I would say, then I would bet you that I can make an argument that the Roth makes so much more sense than the traditional, you know, 401k or IRA. Guys, I would encourage everybody to think about, right, how the system works. Okay, say you put 20 grand into your 401k, regular 401k, you don't pay tax on that money, right? It grows tax deferred, and then you pay tax down the road. But if you're taking 20 grand every year and putting it into the 401k, and you're investing it for 20, 30, 40 years, I think it's pretty logical that you expect to have a lot larger amount of money down the road, right? Mm-hmm. So what you're doing is you're taking a tax break on the small seed that you're planting, and then you're going to grow it for 20 or 30 years, and then you're going to pay tax on that entire harvest, okay? So to me, the smarter thing is to pay the tax on the 20 grand, right? And then when it grows to 50, 60, 70, 80, 100,000, that's the money you get tax-free. That to me makes so much more sense than taking a small tax break up front and paying a big tax bill down the road, all right? That's why Ed Slott wrote a book called The Retirement, I believe it's The Retirement Savings Time Bomb, something like that. I'm paraphrasing, all right?
Sure.
Ed Slott, some people call him America's IRA expert. That's what he's talked about, this time bomb, this bomb that's going to explode, this tax bomb. That's the money that you're going to pay in taxes when you take out your 401k or IRA in retirement. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about this tax time bomb that's going to explode because a lot of people don't realize, you know, that $1 million in your 401k, it's really more like $7 or $7.50 after you pay tax.
Exactly.
So, you know, so be sure to give some thought. Don't just, you know, randomly or without a thought, don't just choose the regular, you know, IRA or 401k. Give some thought to how long you're going to invest that money. How long is it being put away? If you're investing it for more than 20 years, then I think that you'd be far, far better paying the tax now and getting the tax break down the road.
Sure. Okay. I'm going to have to correct you. I just looked it up. The Roth, I thought, anyway, the Roth was introduced in 1997, became law in 1998.
Roth IRA?
Yep.
Yeah, we're referring to Roth 401k.
Oh, your 401k. So, okay.
Yeah,
they've been doing that for 18 years?
The Roth 401k, I believe, came out in 06. The Roth IRA was out several years earlier, though, for
wow.
sure. Yeah.
All right.
And so
all
I think that's because companies weren't real quick. You know, companies aren't really, they're not like jumping on something immediately when it's just done.
No.
They want to wait a little while, you know, because it's going to cost them time and money. And you know, they want to wait to see if it's really something that's worth their investment, you know, to hire people, to change their 401k plan documents and all this other stuff. Because it's not just a flick of a switch for a company. So so I think that my point being is that there's a lot of vehicles out there that you can put money into and to save that have different types of tax breaks. And you want to evaluate which one is going to benefit you the most. If you're also like me, like for instance, I'm a big believer in Roth and I'm a huge believer in a health savings account, which is the HSA account, which is the only truly tax-free account. If there's anything, if you guys buy your own health insurance, you really want to take a hard look at whether you could benefit from the HSA. I'll go on a little side note here. This health savings account, a lot of people aren't familiar with it, but you can invest it in anything. I invest mine in stocks. The way that I do it, I invest my tax-free accounts the most aggressively. And that's because I believe that's where I'm going to get the most growth. And I would like to have the most growth be tax-free. And so that's how I invest personally. So I have an HSA for me and my wife. We both have Roth IRAs, and that's where I do my most aggressive investing because I'm hoping for big gains that are going to be tax-free, you know, in the future. And the nice thing also about the HSA, you don't have to spend it down every year. You can let it grow. That's what we're doing. I plan on letting our HSAs, you can only contribute until you turn 65 and you start Medicare. All right.
Yes.
You cannot contribute past that. But there's so many things you can use that money to pay for, guys. You can use it to pay for instance, your Medicare insurance. So what I'm going to do, to give you an example, most people for their Medicare, once they qualify for Medicare and Social Security, when you sign up, right, the government is automatically going to deduct your Medicare premium from that Social Security money that shows up in your bank account. All right.
Yes.
So it's automatic. It's already going to be deducted. So what I'm planning on doing is what I've been doing for years now already is I am saving all of my receipts and we're keeping records of every medical and health expenditure that qualifies under the HSA. Now, this is medical. It's dental. Guys, if any of you, I don't know how many people have had root canals and crowns and other major dental work, but you can spend tens of thousands of dollars on dental work, no problem, all right? So you can use it for dental. You can use it for eye, for hearing, for chiropractic, for physical therapy, for long-term care.
Sure.
There's many, many, many uses for it. For some reason, you cannot use it for a Medicare supplement plan. I don't know why. But there's a lot of things you can use it for. So I don't have any doubt at all. You know, if you see the studies, there's a lot of studies that say a married couple should have at least $300,000 put away for healthcare in retirement.
Yeah.
What they're talking about is an entire, let's say, a 25-year retirement. That's what they're talking about. And they're saying, okay, you probably spend 12, 13 grand a year over a 25-year retirement, the total being about 300 grand, okay?
Yep.
And so when you look at everything, it does make sense, right? With co-pays, deductibles, out-of-pocket expenses, paying for things that aren't covered by your insurance, all right? So what I'm planning on doing is letting our HSA grow all the way until we're in our 70s, and then I'm going to look back, we're going to pull out all of our records, and I'm going to say, okay, here's $20,000 in expenses, and I'm going to reimburse myself for it, and it'll be totally legal and totally tax-free. Right.
I love that story, Kevin. I do love that story. What a great strategy and a great process to, you know, and you'd be happy to help someone else do that.
I'd be very happy to do that. And guys, I can manage your HSA account just like your IRA.
Oh, no kidding. So that's I don't have to do that all by myself?
You do not. No.
Okay. Good to know. I'm
happy to take that off your hands. And I've got some clients that they say, you know what, when you buy a stock, buy it for me too. I'm happy to do that for you, all right? And of course, we've got to have the conversation about how much risk we're taking and things like that.
Sure.
What your objectives are, your time frame, and all these things. But I'm happy, you know, I eat my own cooking. In other words, you know, I'm in there with you. I'm buying the same investments many times that you know, whether it's a fund or an individual stock. And I don't buy it for any client. I wouldn't buy it for myself. And so we can manage those accounts just like any other account. So we can buy stocks, bonds, mutual funds, exchange traded funds, anything you can buy in the stock and bond markets, you can invest in inside of an HSA. And it's all tax free. And as long as you use the money for healthcare expenses that are, you know, allowed under the program rules, then you can take it out tax free. So you never pay tax on the HSA money if you use it for a covered expense. All right. However, if you don't, I've had some people say, well, how do I know I'm going to need that much money? I kind of chuckle a little because I'm like, well, that's wishful thinking for sure.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
You know, but hey, if you don't, more power to you. After you turn 65, okay, you can take the money out of the HSA for anything you want that are not medical expenses. And the end result, there's no penalty, but you do have to pay income tax on it, right? So now let's think about that, Steve. Do you know what that equals? Do you know what that's the same as? Your IRA.
So, yeah.
It's the same as your IRA. You got a tax deduction when you put it in there. It grew tax deferred. You pay tax when you take it out. So you just turned it into an extra IRA investment, right? So if you're maxing out your 401k, maxing out your IRA, you should be looking at an HSA. If you're eligible, you've got to have an HSA eligible insurance plan, which has to have a high deductible. So that's the downside, all right? If you've got a lot of medical issues and healthcare issues, it might not be the best idea for you because you have to have a high deductible health insurance plan. Mm-hmm. But you wanna at least evaluate it, especially if you're young. If you're below the age of 40, I beg of you to look into this. It will be one of the best investments you've ever made if you can follow the rules and you qualify for it.
But again, so the thing that you just told me is that you can help manage that. You can help, you know, make it work, make it happen. That to me is a real confidence builder.
Oh, God.
I didn't have to do it myself. That's what I was thinking. God, I might have to do this all myself.
Yes. And you know what? We can't be experts at everything, right?
Right.
You know, what do they say? Jack of all trades, master of none.
Yep.
So, you know, I choose to find, you know, I want people with expertise in their area so I can find the best person for, like I mentioned before, if I'm looking for a landscaper, I want a good one. If I'm hiring a roofer, I want a really good one. Right. And if I want a financial advisor, I want a really good one. And so I would encourage, you know, please give me a call. I'll be happy to talk to you guys. In fact, you can just go to my website without even talking to me and go to my Calendly link. It's got my calendar on my website. And you can just book a 15-minute appointment whenever it's convenient for you. All you do is click on the little bubble on the bottom right of the screen, and it'll come up with my calendar. You book a 15-minute meeting. We talk on the phone. And if you feel like it's worth it to come in and sit down face to face, then we set it up. But there's no cost or obligation. I try to make it as easy as I can for people to have a short conversation.
Sure. If you want to call Kevin directly, it's 800-975-6717. That's 800-975-6717. And he's, like he said, visit the website, silverleaffinancial.com. I know we're coming up on the end of the show here, but I want to ask you about the fintech innovations, financial technology.
Yeah.
I mean, we know technology is a big deal, and especially in the financial world. I just read a story this week that said by 2030, advisors, the number of people will be using fewer advisors, relying more on AI.
Yes. I think AI is coming for everybody's job, all right?
Seems like it.
I'm pretty sure that it is. Financial advisors are one. In fact, there's already, I'm sure a lot of you guys know, if you're an investor, I'm sure you know there are robo-advisors right now. Mm-hmm. There have actually been for several years. So you can get, what they do is you fill out these surveys, you answer a bunch of questions, and then they're going to basically put you in a box or a category, and then they're going to give you investments based on that category. And so it's not completely personalized. It is customized based on a broad spectrum of your investment objectives, goals, risk tolerance, things like that. All right. And you might be able to save a little bit of money, but I would encourage you to look at everything. I think that it makes sense to evaluate them, just like if you're sitting down with two or three different advisors to evaluate them and see who's the best fit. I think it also makes sense to evaluate, you know, fintech. And by that, we're talking, you know, I think the oldest one or the original one I always think of is PayPal, you know. I think that one's been around the longest in terms of a way to move money, to send money that was different than their traditional banking systems. And guess what? Elon Musk was behind that one, too. So
and Peter Thiel.
And Peter Thiel, who I believe that's the guy, that's the story with the billion-dollar Roth IRA, right?
Yep, exactly, right? Because he got penny stock, and it was called PayPal.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I forgot about that story. But now every time I hear the name Peter Thiel, that's what I think. And you know what? I got to give him credit. He was smart enough to recognize an opportunity, and he took advantage of it. And so he got all these penny stocks, you know, worth pennies or fractions of pennies in PayPal. And, you know, he had that in his Roth IRA. And then because of the incredible appreciation of the stock, he's got billion. Apparently, rumor has it, he has billions of dollars tax free inside of his Roth. How sweet is that?
I hope he's learning how to share.
Yeah, right? You know what? Can you make me a beneficiary?
Yeah, exactly.
Just leave a little to me. I don't even need all of it.
Yeah, exactly.
But the fintech, you know, there's a lot newer ones now. You have Toast, right? Affirm on the buy now, pay later type of deal.
That's so a whole nother growing business, isn't it? That buy now, pay later.
It is for sure. There's a lot of them out there. And you know what? Technology with artificial intelligence. And I do think, and I saw some reports just in the last few days that artificial intelligence is already replacing jobs. And you can look at companies. One way to figure it out is you can look at companies, look at their payroll, the employee count, and then look at their revenue, their productivity. And you'll see there's a handful of them right now that their employee count has gone down, their productivity has gone up. And you say, well, how is that possible? I have to think they're using AI and other forms of technology and to boost their productivity, right? And
sure.
So it's good for shareholders, but people in the workforce, make sure you keep yourself valuable, right? Learn new skills,
exactly.
Right? Stay exactly. on the front edge. Stay
Use
on the
a pencil.
That's right. And you know, keep yourself valuable. But at the same time, guys, I know we're running out of time here. I think the stock market, you know, we hit record highs again this week.
Yes.
There's a lot of negative spin out there about the economy, but I believe a lot of it's political. And I think they're doing a disservice to you if you've been avoiding investing in the market because you thought things were so negative, all right? You've missed out on a record-breaking run in the stock market if you bought into that. So I think it's important, check your news sources, make sure you've got credible sources that are giving you a balanced picture, that it's not biased one way or the other for some other person, some other agenda, all right? But the economy, to me, still looks good, and I think as long as unemployment stays below 4%, I think the economy looks good, and I believe the markets are going to continue to do well.
I information provided is for illustrative purposes only and does not constitute investment, tax, or legal advice. The covered material has been obtained from sources that are deemed to be reliable, but their accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. There are risks associated with every type of investment vehicle. Please read the prospectus and risk disclosures thoroughly before investing. Insurance guarantees are subject to the insurance company's ability to pay. Neither Silverleaf Financial, Kevin Brooker, host, and guests are responsible for the usage of information discussed. Security and investment services offered through Silverleaf Financial, member FINRA SIPC. Please consult with an experienced advisor before making any investment decisions.
Volatility in the market is a fact. What isn't so clear is what the ups and downs of the market can do to your retirement portfolio. For answers, call Kevin Brooker at 800-975-6717. Kevin is founder and CEO of Silverleaf Financial, and he's been helping people cut through the noise and create a retirement and income plan that can take you all the way through retirement. Call now for your free financial consultation, 800-975-6717. Today's market volatility can really take a toll on your portfolio. But what if you could lock in your gains and still be in a position to participate in the gains without suffering losses if the market plunges again? That's what Kevin Brooker at Silverleaf Financial can help you achieve. Your no-cost analysis includes a portfolio x-ray showing any hidden fees in your current plan. He'll show you how by claiming Social Security at the right time can make a huge difference in your retirement income. Call Kevin Brooker today, 800-975-6717. Do it today.